Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Mentally yours from Ellen and Yvette. A podcast on your mental health, you surely won't regret. It's mentally yours. Hi everyone, and welcome to Mentally Yours, Metro.co.uk's weekly mental health podcast. I'm Yvette.
And I'm Ellen, and this week we're talking about postnatal depression with Emily Jane Clark.
But before we chat to Emily Jane, let's remind ourselves of what happened last week.
The Harlequins Foundation was set up 2 years ago, and we signed the Mental Health Charter because we wanted to step into a space which no other rugby foundation was doing anything it really about. Some had activities, but this is going to be a mainstay of what we do for years to come.
Emily Jane is a metro.co.uk blogger. She's also got her own blog, Sleepers for the Week, and she's a published author. So she's here to talk to us about postnatal depression. So today I'd like us to talk about postnatal depression in a train station. Thank you very much to Cersei's Champagne Bar, which is where we are, in St Pancras International Station in London. Emily Jane, why are we here?
Well, definitely not because I wanted to come to a champagne bar in London and get out of bedtime and dinner time. Mostly because I want to do this podcast and I have a massive tube phobia anxiety.
So you'll probably hear bits and bobs of trains coming past because that's where we're recording, at St Pancras, which celebrates its 150th birthday this year with a series of events, exhibitions and installations in the run-up to the big day, which is on the 1st of October. To find out about these, you can check out stpancras.com for more information. So, Emily Jane, thank you very much. Hi. Thank you very much for coming on Mentally Yours. I'm very excited to meet you. You've been writing for metro.co.uk for a while now. And generally what you write about is parenting blogs for me. Mm-hmm. And you've also written some stuff for us about postnatal depression.
Yes, that's
which
right.
is what I'd like us to have a chat about today. The obvious thing to ask to start with is, before you experienced it, had you had any experience of mental health issues at all?
No, not really. Certainly nothing sort of clinical, I think. You know, everyone else, I'd had sort of ups and downs and a bit of anxiety when I was younger, I think. Perhaps had panic attacks. But again, nothing that, you know, couldn't be solved with a cup of chamomile tea. And I hadn't really come across anyone who had suffered from mental illness either, which was why I think it was so hard to recognise that I had actually something wrong with me.
How did you recognize it? When did you start noticing something wasn't quite right?
It wasn't actually me, it was kind of other people. Postnatal depression is so different from every person, and it can come kind of different stages of post-birth. Actually, some people get it prenatally as well, but mine actually hit me the instant the baby had come out. Literally as soon as she was born, I burst into tears. It was really weird. It was a perfectly all right water birth. It wasn't traumatic. But obviously I'd never had a baby before, so I kind of thought, maybe this is just what happens, you know? Just basically, like, 2 weeks later, I was still crying. So hadn't slept, and the health visitor sort of said, maybe you've got postnatal depression. And I was like, no, I haven't, honestly. Because, like, you know, it's really weird, because it's not like an obvious you feel different. It's like quite a gradual thing. And obviously I had a baby. I was really tired, wasn't sleeping. So I just assumed that when I get some sleep, I'll feel okay again. And, you know, and then we had the midwife saying, maybe you've got postnatal depression. I was like, no, honestly, I didn't know much about it, to be honest. I based it all on, you know, soap operas where, you know, you'd see the mum throw the baby, the pram, into the road, or they didn't love their baby and things like that. So, and I didn't have those symptoms. It was 6 years ago, and there wasn't as much sort of written about it. People weren't as open back then. There wasn't things like this podcast or anything. So I just didn't have a clue. I refused to believe I had postnatal depression. I just genuinely believed I was rubbish at looking after babies. I was like, I'm so rubbish at looking after babies. I'm not going to use an excuse that I've got an illness, you know, when I'm just tired and rubbish at motherhood. So, yeah, it was other people rather than me that kind of told me I was ill.
What do you think it's like these days in terms of the amount of pressure on mums to be sort of like the perfect mother? Do you think that's still an issue, or do you think it's
It's getting a lot better than when I had my baby. There wasn't as many of these kind of honest blogs, and people weren't as open about mental health. It was kind of the peak time of the perfect mother. There was a lot of crafty blogs and you know, things like that. There's a lot of glossy magazine articles. All I found about it was these mothers having a wonderful time. Yeah, I just felt like I must be doing something wrong. You know, I'm just not good enough. And that definitely, while I don't think that was the cause of the postnatal depression, I think that's so complicated to put down what it is. I think it definitely didn't help, sort of being confronted with that and just feeling I am not like that. I read all the books as well, which was also my downfall, because I thought it would be really good to read all the books about babies before I had the baby. So, you know, I was like having to go at my husband, why are you reading these? We need to know everything, because I had no friends with babies. I didn't have a clue how to look after one. So I thought the best idea would be to read every single book out there. So obviously when the baby came along, it was a bit of a shock to the system that it didn't do anything that the babies in the books did. I also think that was another thing that contributed to the postnatal depression, because I just felt such a failure because it wasn't happening like I had envisaged it happening from the books and, you know, the stuff I'd read.
From the time between sort of starting to get very upset after your birth of your child, how long did it take you to then start getting the steps to get help?
I think it was a long time. Like, eventually went to the GP after my midwife, the health visitor, kept saying, you know, you just go and just see what they say. And the GP even said I had postnatal depression and I had really bad anxiety with it as well. I was still like, and she gave me some antidepressants, but I was still really did not, even though it was pretty, you know, I couldn't sleep, had really bad insomnia, I couldn't eat anything, I'd lost loads of weight just in that first like few months, I was crying all the time. So it was, you know, when I got better I could see how bad I was, but even then I was like, look, I remember saying to the doctor, look, if I was really ill and had really bad clinical depression, I wouldn't be able to get out of bed. I mean, I've got up, I put my makeup on, I come to the, you know. And anyway, like about a week later, I couldn't get out of bed. So I was like, oh, okay. I remember in my head having this really big, good plan. I would just stay in the bedroom, because I think I'd got really anxious about carrying the baby down the stairs in case I dropped her. So I remember just sitting on my bed, just crying, thinking, I'm just going to stay in here, because I was breastfeeding. So I just thought, I've got boobs, I've got nappies, I'll just stay in here. And in my head, I think it made perfect sense just to do this. And I think that was when I kind of realised my husband came home and I'd been sick, the baby had been sick. So I was trying to force myself to eat because I just couldn't eat. So I was just sick everywhere. My husband's like, I think we need to maybe go and stay with your parents for a bit. So that was when I kind of started going to the therapist.
Were a lot of your symptoms similar to that, where you were like worried about hurting the baby or something bad happening to the baby?
Yeah, definitely. I had very bad anxiety. They often go together, don't they, depression and anxiety, but we couldn't quite pinpoint which came first. Was I depressed because I was so anxious about the baby, or was I, you know, anxious because I was depressed? It was very confusing, but I definitely, everything made me anxious. I was worried that because I was so tired and sleep deprived, I was worried if I went outside with her, what if I passed out, you know, and left the, and the baby was there in the pram. I was worried that, you know, a kidnapper would know that, this is, it sounds ridiculous now, a kidnapper would know that I was tired, so feel they could just come and nick the baby. And the neighbours, perfectly lovely, but I was convinced that they were going to come and kill my baby because she was crying in the night, and it was like a terrace house. So in my head I was thinking, what if they get so wound up? And I know it sounds ridiculous. The other time it was really scary. I just like thought, you know, they're gonna just come. And even I couldn't have any noise in the house, so even the baby crying would give me a panic attack because I just felt like they're gonna hear that. And I remember she had a cop mobile, and I couldn't have that on because I thought, imagine hearing that tune over and over again. It something might flip in their brains. And these poor neighbours. I think I saw them when I got better a few months later, and they were just really nice and said, "Oh, how's the baby?" And I thought, "Oh, actually, maybe they're not murderers after all."
To be clear, like, that doesn't sound ridiculous at all. I think I have obsessive thoughts, intrusive thoughts, and it's
that's
so
what
similar.
It is, yeah.
And I think like if you then had a baby added in, where it is actually a vulnerable small human being, it magnifies that massively.
Definitely. And the weird thing about kind of a mental illness, it's not obvious to you. It kind of sneaks its way in until you lose sight of what's of kind of the line between reality and, you know, insanity. It gets a bit blurred and it sort of wheedles its way in. If you don't get help, it sets in, and, you know, those intrusive thoughts actually start to feel like your reality, which is why it's so important to obviously get help and get the counselling. So I had cognitive behavioural therapy, so they kind of change your behaviour and the way you see your thoughts and give you techniques, which was a godsend.
Was that the main way that you kind of got through it? Started feeling better?
They gave me the antidepressants, but I actually got so anxious about taking them because I was breastfeeding, and breastfeeding was the only thing I could do because, well, it wasn't even me, I suppose, it was the baby could do it. But I've been told to stop because I was hardly eating and sleeping, but I thought it's the only thing I could manage to do, you know, back then. So, and they assured me that the drugs were fine with breast milk, but you know what, when you're in that place. And the side effects were awful. I took a few and they just made me really sick and horrible, so I just came off them. But I started cognitive behavioural therapy, and when I actually started, I was going for insomnia because this was at the point where I was still convinced I just needed a good night's sleep. There was nothing wrong with me. So I was like, oh, yeah, she's going to help me with my insomnia. So I went for the initial consultation. She said, I remember lying on the Edinburgh scale thingy and pretending I was better because I thought, I was trying to judge it. If I'd had a good night's sleep, this would be the truth. But she referred me to the sort of lead psychiatrist, and she basically told me off for for leaving it so long. And she was like, you're actually really ill. You know, if you won't take the antidepressants, I will help you, but I will warn you, it's a bit like trying to, you know, help a broken arm without a plaster cast.
When you were kind of told there is something wrong, how did you feel? Like, did you feel any shame? Did you feel relief?
I don't know, actually. It's kind of neither, really. It's still, I think when you first hear it, and you hear this expert who's seen so many people with the same problems of you say, it still doesn't kind of, at that moment, sink in. I think, you know, you go home, you start going about things, and you read the information they give you, and it sort of sinks in gradually, and you think, oh, actually, maybe she has got a point. But there's always that little part, that little voice in your head that says, no, you're not ill, you're just rubbish. You're just rubbish at this. Don't use it as an excuse. It, like, it's always there on your shoulder trying to convince you you're not ill. And it's only when you can get it into your mind, you can accept it, you can start really helping yourself.
Can you talk to your family and friends about postnatal depression?
It depends, I think. Personally, I didn't talk to anyone about it. I just felt, and certainly a lot of women I've spoke to as well were the same. You just feel so ashamed, I think, because you've got this perfect little baby and, you know, you're supposed to be feeling all these joyous feelings and love for your baby, but you don't. So you feel kind of ungrateful. You don't want anyone to see that. So I didn't really talk to anyone. I spoke to my mum, who, again, at the beginning was convinced that I just needed a good night's sleep until I went to stay with her and she kind of realised, yes, you probably do need help. But I got quite good at hiding it, and I think that was part of the problem why I got so bad, because I kept it all inside. And if you met me on the outside, I looked totally normal because I just didn't want to talk about it. And it is exhausting, like keeping up the pretense. I just avoided people as much as I could until the charity Homestart got in touch and kind of forced me to go to one of their groups, and I met other people with mental illness and babies as well, and actually they were all quite normal too. I didn't go for ages. I was expecting this room of crying mothers and like suicidal people. Like, I was like, that's just going to make me more depressed, I'm not going. But actually they were all pretty cool.
With Homestart Group, what did that actually involve? Was it just kind of talking about stuff? Was it more supportive?
It was just really whatever you wanted it to be, really. You could go and talk about what you saw on the telly last night, or some people would open up and talk about how they were feeling. So it was just really great. There was no pressure to talk if you didn't want to. You could just sit there and, you know, have a cup of tea with other people in the room, or, you know, if you wanted to talk, there was always one of the volunteers who had probably been through it themselves once upon a time. You could have a chat to them or one of the other mums, but there was such a wide range of people. It did make you feel less alone, I think, because you feel like, oh God, actually, you know, I'm not the only one. And postnatal depression isn't actually just like the soap operas. It sort of affects everyone differently.
And I'm sure it's so easy to become really isolated when you're experiencing that, because you're like, I'll just stay home, look after the baby, kind of be in this pit of feeling awful.
You think, if I can stay in here until it's over, until I'm better, and every day seems like a year, it's so hard. I just remember, like, them saying, if you go to this therapy, if you try and get help. I kept asking them, when will I be better? When will I be better? And they were like, well, it could take a few months. And that at the time just felt, you know, it just felt like it sounded forever. Even if they said, you know, take the antidepressants, you know, they could help. Still, it was like, oh, it could be sort of 6 weeks. I was like, oh, but then what if I'm getting better by then? And I've started taking, so it's just, yeah, it does make it seem even longer when you are just sitting in the house on your own, trying to sort of get through it until you feel better again.
What kind of support or actions can people take to make it a bit easier and less kind of awful for a mum who's struggling with postnatal depression?
I think just sort of let her know you're there. You know, don't even try and offer advice or anything. I think just support with practical things is always a good one, because when you're really depressed, even something like washing a bowl feels like a major chore. You just want to lie on the settee. And I remember staring at the no signal for about on the telly, on the Sky, because I just couldn't face getting up and getting the remote control. It's like not a laziness, it's a real, like, I don't know, overwhelming feeling, like everything's so hard. So practical things are definitely a help. And just reassuring her, really, that it's actually not her fault. She is just sick, and it can happen to anyone. You know, the same as people could get asthma or diabetes, you know, things like that. So,
and do you think on the part of doctors, would it have been helpful to have those kind of early check-ins so you figured out what was happening sooner?
I don't know. Maybe with some people. I did see the doctor fairly soon, but she just kind of, she didn't really go into detail. She gave me the antidepressants, basically. Yeah. And so I was still thinking I don't need them. I just thought she was trying to give me a quick fix, get out. And, you know, she didn't really explain what they did. Or I was just thinking, because obviously I've totally sucked in by mainstream media, thinking that these happy pills are going to change me and suddenly make me all happy. And I was like, that's, you know, I'd be such a weakling if I needed happy, you know, things like that. But obviously now, I know a lot better.
Yeah, it's none of it's
yes,
true.
Exactly.
How has blogging and the blogging community helped you with postnatal depression, but also just generally with sort of challenges of motherhood?
I started writing about postnatal depression and the sleep thing. There wasn't kind of that many things about sort of saying how hard, the hard side of motherhood, because it was a fair few years ago now. And so it was really great, because suddenly I've met all these brilliant people online that were going through the same thing as me. So I think instantly I felt less alone. And, you know, through writing sort of about quite dark things, but making sort of it through humour, I just saw, not the funny side, because it wasn't actually funny, but I just think it just helped. And speaking to other people also made it, who made me laugh about everything.
In terms of having a second child, were you very scared about having one at all? Because did you expect to have postnatal tension again?
I was absolutely terrified. I mean, it wasn't strictly planned. Sorry, baby. I always planned to have two, actually, but I just was going to have a little rest first. Mm. I was already in therapy by then, so it was really useful because obviously I could bring up all my fears with my therapist. Actually, I think in a way it made me more determined to try, and I think I doubled my sessions and I really wanted to get better before the baby. But also I'd resigned myself to probably having postnatal depression again. I think the odds are quite high. If you've had it before, you will get it again. And my therapist was honest with me and kind of said, you will. But I think I'd set myself up a support network by that time. I had the therapy, she was going to come round and see me, my therapist, after I had the baby. All my family were aware of it. I'd kind of talked about it and by then. So I think I had everything in place, so it was okay. I was almost on a high because I didn't have postnatal depression, even though I was really knackered, not sleeping, you know, felt rubbish, got these stitches. I felt almost like elated just because I'd had a baby and it was 2 days later and I wasn't crying.
What's the kind of time frame? Is there a general time frame for postnatal depression, for how long it lasts, or does it just vary for every person?
I think it varies. And also some people don't actually get, they can sort of go along, you know, the first 9 months to a year feeling perfectly okay, and it suddenly hits them then. And it can set in at any time, and then it depends on how much help and support you have. Mm. I it's so important that we do talk about it. I think that is key to recovery. And if antidepressants are offered to you and you think that they will help, on their own they probably won't. You do need to do the talking as well to get to the bottom of it. But yeah, definitely. I mean, it took me a while because I was in denial about it. But from when I actually started accepting it and getting help, you know, it was a few months where I started to feel a little bit better. Mm. But had I not had, you know, all that support network, and I lived in an area where the waiting list wasn't too long for CBT, and they had Home Start charity that actually came round to your house to check on you, had my, you know, family around the corner. Had I not had that, I just dread to think how much it would have spiralled out of control.
How did it affect your relationship with your partner?
Well, it was really tough, actually, because he was also kind of dealing with first-time parenthood, and he's not very good with the lack of sleep thing. So he was struggling himself, and then obviously saw me struggling. And we were all a complete mess. So he just came home from work one day, and we, like I said, there was just this sick everywhere, you know, because I tried to eat this microwave cottage pie. I don't know why that matters to the story. Just remember... sticks out of my head. And the baby was just a sicky baby, and so he just came home and drove to mum and dad's, and we went and stayed in my old bedroom for a while, which was weird. But he was just didn't know what to do. He couldn't. We just thought we just need some extra help. So it's a bit depressing when you have to go back to your parents' house for help when you're a mother yourself. But
for the fact that you actually got the help, I mean, yes. I think it's just really important.
Yeah, I had some amazing people. The health visitor just was, you know, she was coming more regularly to come and see me. They were just, I think that was definitely key to recovering.
So what advice would you give to partners on supporting someone with postnatal depression?
I would say find out as much as you can about postnatal depression yourself. Perhaps go along to one of the therapy sessions, or just, you know, look online. Because that will give you a better understanding of what they're going through, because it's not always easy for someone to explain what they're feeling to you. And just be really patient, and don't kind of, you've got to see it. It's hard when someone's being really, you can become really distant and into yourself. It's hard to kind of not resent them, I think. But I think you've just got to think, it is even yourself, think it's an illness, she can't help it, and just try and be as patient. And practical things, like I said, with the friends as well, just really help with them, and just reassure her that even though she feels rubbish, she's not a rubbish mum.
So when we launched the podcast, the idea of it was to try and make fun of some aspects of mental health. So I know a lot of the blogs you've written me are hilarious. which sounds like a kind of hard thing to do, you know, be talking about these serious things, difficult times in women's lives, but then having that kind of black humour. Mm-hmm. Looking back now, are there any sort of instances that you see as quite funny?
Obviously not funny at the time, just the way your mind plays tricks on you when you are that tired, like the paranoid thoughts, and you know, when I became convinced these neighbours were child snatchers and that they were stalking me, and I just, you know, remember telling my husband that, you know, they're definitely stalking me, and he was like, you don't even leave the house, how are they stalking you? I was kind of like, well, you know, when I took the bins out, it's sort of like, yeah, okay, it's bin day, so probably doing their bins too. And I just remember hallucinating, which sounded really weird now. I remember hallucinating. I used to hallucinate my baby daughter's head on my husband's body. So he'd come in, and I just, obviously, this was sleep deprivation and the depression as well. And this, obviously, at the time it was terrifying, but thinking back, I can see this baby faced husband. I know, it was really weird. It was really freaky. It was and then I had another hallucination that used to get me, like, in the night, because I was breastfeeding. My baby would just sort of become part of my breast, so the head would disappear, and it was just boob and body, like, across there. And I remember being so tired and seeing this hallucination, I was thinking, actually, that's quite handy, because now I won't have to pick her up to be... I was like, that far gone. I was actually thinking, oh, actually, would be quite handy now my baby's stuck to my boob.
So, I mean, in a way, it kind of would be, wouldn't it?
It would, wouldn't it? You know, yeah. See, there's a part of me that still thinks, actually, if they could invent babies that do that, that might be a good thing. I could have had a few naps then, couldn't I, while the baby just sat there.
Yeah.
Mind you, if it went for a poo or something, it might get a bit messy.
Yeah, that's the flaw in the plan, I think.
Yeah.
So this is goodbye from Mentally Yours. So go away, enjoy your day, get on with all your chores from Mentally Yours.
Thanks very much to Emily Jane, and thanks very much to Circe Champagne Bar and St Pancras International Station for hosting us. If you've been affected by any of the issues we've been chatting about this week, please ring the Samaritans on 116 123 or go to samaritans.org. There's also some information about postnatal depression at the NCT website, which is nct.org.uk.
If you enjoyed this week's episode, please do give us a review on iTunes or join us on our Facebook group, which is just at Mentally Yours, and it's where we're chatting about all things mental health, so it's a great place to hang out.
So join us next week. Bye, everyone.
Toot, toot. Well, that's our train. Guess we'd better get on it. On we get. Mind the gap.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.